The Rob Brown Show begins hour number two right this very second. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Fan Upstate. Howdy, y'all. Welcome back. Good to have you. Rob Brown, the great one, Alonzo, with you on a Monday morning. Overreaction Monday, perhaps the most overused trope in all of sports talk radio. Why? Because it's good. All right? Because that's what we do on Mondays. We're sports fans. We are sports fanatics. Overreacting is just kind of what we do. So let's continue to overreact. We've got a lot of stories we got to get to. Dak Prescott gets his deal done with the Dallas Cowboys. Deshaun Watson causing unrest amongst the Cleveland Browns fan base. And all the other, Tyreek Hill getting arrested minutes before the Dolphins game yesterday in front of Hard Rock Stadium. We are at no shortage of storylines out of the Nash. Football League. And we'll come to that coming up in a little while. We got college football. Both the Gamecocks and the Tigers get big time wins this weekend. South Carolina on the road over Kentucky kept them out of the end zone all game long. The Clemson Tigers, on the other hand, set a record for most points and yards recorded in a quarter for that school. We're going to talk about that because Cade Klubnik had a lot of handoffs that went very long to the end zone. Oh, sorry. Those were passes? Those were passes for Cade Klubnik.
They were clean passes.
Dimes.
They were.
Dots. Darts. Whatever you want to call them. Cade had them for you in spades for the Tigers. We're going to come up to that here in just a little while. Notre Dame takes an L to the Huskies of Northern Illinois, yet stay inside the top 20 because reasons.
Huh? What?
I know. Somehow ahead of Louisville. 2-0, Arizona 2-0. The Iowa State Hawkeyes come in there and get wrecked by the Iowa State Cyclones. We got to get into the Cy-Hawk Bowl because that was disturbing.
Iowa got beat by Iowa State.
Yeah, Iowa State, the Cyclones.
You said Iowa State beat Iowa State.
No, I said Iowa. I was going to say, got wrecked by the Iowa State Cyclones. Cleaned it up.
Are you sure?
Yeah, no, I am.
You're positive fixed that?
Okay. I am.
All right.
I am. I'm comfortable. Ohio State drops a spot in the AP Top 25, yet somehow has more first place votes than the Texas Longhorns. But Texas went up to Michigan and beat them at a top 10 showdown at the Big House. Thank you for winning me all that money, Quinn Ewers, because that seemed like the easiest pick of No, it didn't. The easiest pick of the weekend. I spent Friday trying to tell you, if you listen to Bet for the Cycle, I tried Saturday to tell you that Nebraska was going to wreck Colorado. Wreck them.
By the way, Quinn, the best guy on the Dr. Pepper current athlete on Dr. Pepper commercials.
He's right there with the boss, bud.
No, the boss is still there. I said current athlete.
Oh, current athlete.
Yeah, okay. He's very natural. He is. The other guys, you could tell, it probably took a few takes.
He got it. He knows it. Quinn Ewers, of course, also looked like a gunslinger against Michigan. Georgia stays up top of the AP. You know what? That's part of the water cooler cheat sheet. Why are we talking about it now? Why are we not just saying, hey, you got to check into work in 55 minutes, answer the emails, blah, 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 walk down the hallway, talk sports, you're going to talk sports, you need this. Yes, the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this lovely Monday morning. When you do, this is what you'll be discussing, or at least partly, but, you know, the most, you get it. Let's jump right in. Item number one. I don't care if you don't think that this should be an item on the water cooler cheat sheet. I do. Captain America Alex Morgan called it a career this weekend, played 13 minutes before checking out of her final match, the San Diego Wave.
That was the wrong one. There we go. That's what I meant to hit.
Let's see. Which one do I want to go with? I could go with...
Last I checked, it's football season. I could be wrong.
That one. You know, any of those would have been applicable for what you just did. Alex Morgan, 13 minutes before checking out her final game, the 35-year-old announced her retirement last week and stepped out against the North Carolina Courage, taking off her boots in a symbolic display to mark the end of a historic career.
They don't wear boots.
They're boots in the soccer world, in the football world,
in the cleats, footy world. They're not boots.
Listen, you know me more than anybody else is a fan of that. But for Alex Morgan, we're talking about this as soccer fans, not haters,
Wee stuff.
All right. Stellar career that included Olympic gold medals, it included World Cup titles, it included NWSL golden boots throughout the career. It was a stellar career that included her final game being shown across the entire ESPN network. It was on every outlet that could find it and had the rights to pick it up. Alex Morgan in the discussion for the GOAT when it comes to American women's soccer. The names, Chastain, Ham, Wambach, Morgan. That's my top four. There's a few others that could be in the argument, but Alex Morgan absolutely on the Mount Rushmore of American women's soccer. Decided she wants to step away and be both a family mom, No, I'm not going to rush, Lonzo. You knock it off, all right? You just go keep reading your AP poll. And have fun. We'll come to you later. But this is about Captain America, Alex Morgan. This is about the GOAT, all right? Stepping away after 150 NWSL games, 63 spent in San Diego, wore the captain's armband for the final time, spent time on the field after the game with a mic addressing the fans. Her four-year-old daughter, Charlie, was there as well. Just a phenomenal career for a young lady who has been a game changer. She was part of the revolution that grew women's soccer and women's athletics to a higher level than ever before. You put her out there with names that were the Rapinos of the world, the Hope Solos of the world, and they were the primary driving factor of what I think was going to be considered a golden era of growth in women's sports. Alex Morgan, thank you for everything. Alex Morgan, thank you for being a genuine hero. Alex Morgan, by the way, and I can say this sincerely, the first, and it probably, this reflects on me more than anything, the first female athlete that I went and specifically found her jersey to wear. Rocked an Alex Morgan jersey for many, many years before I put so many miles on it that it fell apart. We'll also tell you that yesterday after this match, immediately purchased a San Diego Wave Alex Morgan jersey. We'll be here in a couple of weeks and can't wait to debut it. Alex Morgan, thank you for the memories. You legend. Item number two. Your AP Top 25 poll is out for week number two, and shock of shocks, I know the Georgia Bulldogs hang on to their number one position. They improved to 2-0 this weekend with a 48-3 win over Tennessee Tech. Didn't really play anybody, did exactly what they needed to do, went out and dominated. Texas jumps Ohio State into that number two position after they went to the Big House and laid it down on the Michigan Wolverines. I do think this is more about Michigan stepping backwards than it is Texas stepping up, but the voters saw it a different way. However, only four first place votes. Five of them went to the team checked in at number three, Ohio State, the only team that does not belong to the Southeastern Conference inside of the top seven. Alabama goes to four, actually stays at four. Ole Miss jumps a spot to number five. Missouri steps all the way up to number three because apparently beating Buffalo is worth jumping Tennessee, Penn State, and Oregon, but that's just not me. Tennessee goes to seven. Penn State will, despite a scare against Bowling Green, stay at number eight. Oregon drops a pair of spots down to nine. Miami jumps a couple of spots up to number 10 to round out the top 10 after they lay it down on FAMU this weekend. USC comes up two spots to number 11. Utah drops one down to 12, waiting to find out. Cam Rising hurt once again. Where does Cam Rising end up? We'll find out. Utah number 12. The Oklahoma State Cowboys had a scare against Arkansas, yet still jumped up three spots to number 13. The Wildcats of Kansas State at 14. Oklahoma in spot number 15. What ahead of 1-1 LSU, who jumped up a couple of spots. 17, Michigan down 7. 18, Notre Dame down 13 positions after they lose to Northern Illinois this weekend. Walk-off field goal for the Huskies. The Irish doing all they can to keep the always overrated narrative alive. 19, Louisville up three spots. Arizona hangs out at number 20. Iowa State makes their way into the top 25 rankings for the first time this year after they knocked off a top 15 Iowa Hawkeye team. Clemson up three spots from 25, now at 22 after they bring the hammer down on the Mountaineers of Appalachian State. Nebraska to number 23. They were unranked last week. So was Boston College, now at 24, and Northern Illinois knocked off Notre Dame and then jumps to 25. Also receiving votes, how about this? UCF got a vote. TCU got two. BYU, Cal, North Carolina, UNLV, Wisconsin, Liberty, and South Carolina picking up 10 votes in the AP poll. Not ranked, but on their way there. On their way there after being 2-0, put another one in the bag. We'll see what happens. That's your AP poll. Let's get to item number three. We'll do a Palmetto weekend wrap-up on Mondays during the water cooler cheat sheet. Let's do that right now. We start in the National Football League mainly so that we don't have to spend a ton of time on the National Football League. We spent the entire first hour on the Carolina Panthers. And maybe we'll get back to them later in the show. We'll find out. 47-10, the New Orleans Saints devastate Carolina in game number one. Bryce Young, 13 of 30 for a .161, a pair of interceptions, no touchdowns, a game-long QB rating of 10.7. Not ideal. Carolina also getting only 58 yards, one touchdown on the ground. Adam Thielen led all receivers, three grabs, 49 yards. John Mango had two for 40. Xavier Leggett, four for 35. Deontay Johnson, supposed to be the game changer, only two catches, 19 yards in total. No touchdowns through the air for this team. On the flip side, New Orleans, Derek Carr, 19 of 23, 200 yards and three touchdowns. Alvin Kamara on the ground, 15 carries, 83 yards and a touchdown. Jamal Williams had 11 for 38 and a tutty as well. Rashid Shaheed, 73 yards, including a 59-yard touchdown on the opening drive. And the Saints never looked back. To college football we go, where the Kentucky Wildcats were at the house hosting the Gamecocks. And it went real bad if you're a Wildcat, real good if you root for USC. Lenora Sellers, just 15 passing attempts, but he converted 11 of them for a pair of touchdowns, one interception, a 54 QBR. Rocket Raheem Sanders, 13 carries, 54 yards, and a touch. Backup Robbie Ashford had to come in for some time, the former Auburn man, as Lenoris had to make his way to the back for an injury. Robbie Ashford was one of one for 7 yards, but he toted the rock six times for 26 yards. Your second leading rusher on the game. Matsio Bennett Jr., the freshman, the rook from right here in Greenville, South Carolina, three grabs, 63 yards and a touchdown there. Held Brock Vandegrift. Check out this number for the transfer out of Georgia to Kentucky. 3 of 10, 30 yards, no touchdowns, one interception, and a QBR of 1, ultimately. 139 through the air. Wait.
You said one.
One.
As in singular.
One. As in a single. His QBR was one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I watched the game, so I'm not shocked, but I've never heard of
real
a
bad.
One.
Real bad. They went with Gavin Wimsatt, the backup. He was 3 of 7 for 44 yards. The Cats ran it for 139 compared to South Carolina's 86. So the rushing game was good, but receiving just 44 yards in total through the air for Kentucky. South Carolina ended the game with 5 sacks overall, a pair of INT takeaways as well. Good day for South Carolina. Also a good day for the Clemson Tigers. 66-20, they knock off Appalachian State. This team had 35 points in the first quarter, 21 in the second, before Cade Klubnik, who was 24 of 26 for 378 and 5 touchdowns. Y'all, that is an immaculate game line. This man did it in the first half before he gave way to Chris Vinzina, who came in 7-11 for 78 yards. Phil Maffa had a .118 and a tutty on the ground on 10 carries, 11.8 yards per carry. Jay Haynes had 5 for 49. Bryant Wesco Jr., that's the name Cade Klubnik told us to look about. Bryant Wesco, three grabs, a 130 and a tutty. Jake Brenningstool, Can you get Jake Brittingschool more into the offense more often, please? Can this man be a regular feature, please? 7 catches, a century mark through the air, and 2 touchdowns. Cole Turner had 4 for 49. Antonio Williams, 3 for 44. TJ Moore, 3 for 44. Adam Randall, 4 for 31. Pretty good day through the air for the Clemson Tigers behind Cade Klubnik. And then we wrap it up with not what you wanted as the Furman Paladins find themselves on the losing end of a matchup this weekend at home against the Charleston Southern Buccaneers. 24-20, your final. The Dens unable to defend the house. Trey Hedden, starting quarterback, 12 of 25 for 193, a touch and a pick in this one. On the ground, Mayan Hicks, 14 carries, 68 yards and a touch, but it was Charleston Southern coming up with multiple turnovers, including 3 from Hedden. He lost 2 of them that proved to be the distance, the difference. A lot of wind in this game. Made field goals very difficult. I was actually at this game thanks to our friends over at Furman, which you can hear Furman football right here on the Fan Upstate, including trying to get it right after an 0-2 start this weekend when they host the Stetson Hatters. It'll be a rebound game for Furman, who did not get it done. You got to wonder what the impact of that 76-0 road loss to Ole Miss was for Furman coming into this one. Can Clay Hendricks get it turned around? We're going to talk some Furman ball later in the show, later in the week. There's your South Carolina football update. When we come back, let's talk some college ball. Biggest storylines from the weekend. Rob Brown, Lonzo, and you on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Went into the weekend saying that if the Gamecocks of South Carolina wanted to find their way into a bowl game, Kentucky was a must win, and boy howdy, they must want it. South Carolina with a massive win over the Wildcats of Kentucky went into their house and slugged it to them. 31-6 is your final in this one. Look, I think there's a lot of different angles that we could take, but I think the one you have to jump on is this defense was not playing around. They came to play.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is this I think that's the major thing. Is South Carolina's defense for real? Because that's 2 weeks in a row that this defense has showed up and created turnovers and things like that and given a short field to Lenore Sellers and the offense.
I mean, listen, you were creating turnovers, you were getting sacks, you were limiting the passing game entirely. Brock Vandegrift looked like he had never played quarterback in his life. 3 of 10 for 30 yards in a pick before he made way for Gavin Wimsatt, who was 3 of 7 for 14 yards and a pick. You made a team in Kentucky. Now, I will say this. I do think that there is a part of the equation that has to be mentioned, and that is the like, what is Kentucky? Did we oversell Kentucky, or did we undersell South Carolina? I'll tell you who has thoughts on that. Shane Beamer. This was right after the game. Everybody on our program made a statement. I would concur. Is that Megatron playing with Megatron? It is. It's incredible.
It's a paradox. I think that's Thor playing with Thor.
We got Calvin Johnson playing with a Megatron figurine. Chris Hemsworth playing with a Thor figurine on my TV as we get set for the new Transformers movie.
Actually, he's not playing with Thor.
Oh, what all, up, those, Scarlett Johansson?
All those guys, I think, are the voice actors.
Yeah, they are. Thor is Optimus Prime.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Very fun. Anyway, let's get back to this game. I do have to ask the question. Have we all overvalued Kentucky to some degree based on their quarterbacks from the last couple of years? Last year they had Devin Leary, the transfer in. Dude was putting up like 325 a game through the air, except at South Carolina where he only had 171 through the air as the Gamecocks knocked off Kentucky last year, 17-14. Year before that, they had Will Levis, who was like good until he wasn't for the Titans this weekend. You know who else wasn't good? Caleb Williams. We'll talk about that later in the show. Because me and Bill Belichick are having a fight right now. He doesn't know it, but we are. And I'll tell you why coming up. put all that aside, we're focusing on South Carolina. Maybe.
That's what we're known for on this show, focus.
We never go off the rails here. Maybe we overvalued Kentucky a little bit. I don't really care. Kentucky is a team that is made of some athletes. Like we said, Brock Vandergrift was maybe not in that top tier with guys like Cam Ward, but Brock Vandergrift was one of the quarterbacks in the portal that was very sought after. Kentucky landed him, thought they had a renaissance, that they were going to be able to keep the quarterback spot, which they've been pretty good at the last 2 years, alive. South Carolina made him look silly, all right? So I like that take from Shano because, again, there were a lot of lazy narratives, a lot of lazy takes about this team. You didn't get them on this show. All right, this show, very nuanced, very deep dives. We were talking about the X's and O's, not just the, yeah, I was disappointed with the week one performance, but I also told you why. I don't think that was lazy. What I will say is, defensively, this team created a world, and I think it needs to all year long. It created a world where you don't have to ask a lot out of the offense. Right? Like that to me, that was a big part of what I needed out of this team. It's a big part of what we got out of this team.
That's what you want from a veteran defense, and you have all that youth on offense. You know, give them a chance. Short field, who doesn't want a short field like that? That's, and by the way, Kentucky, not a rivalry.
I disagree. I think that's okay.
You got to win some.
I mean, oh, okay. I get what you're doing there. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, you got to win some. It's not a rivalry.
I mean, I don't agree with that. I think a rivalry is when one team does not care if they win 50. They want to be 51 because screw that team. That's why.
All right. One team, maybe Carolina takes it as a rivalry, but Kentucky just, they didn't show up.
So. I'm going to disagree, and here's how I know. They kept going to the sidelines of the Kentucky game to show sad Kentucky fans doing the old surrender cobra, which is the best thing in sports. I love crowd-wide surrender cobra shots. All the Kentucky fans, Lonzo, I don't know if you saw it, were showing up in the Shane Beamer sunglasses and doing dumb dances and then stopped doing that and took the sunglasses off.
Well, because they had to leave. So they,
rivalry.
They were leaving pretty early. So
I mean, rivalry. All right. So South Carolina's defense made life easy for the offense. They gave them short fields. They gave them the opportunity to slowly. It was 10-6 at halftime. Right? 10-6 at halftime before South Carolina came out in the second half. And that's the spot where if a defense is going to fade, a defense is going to fade. South Carolina's didn't. In fact, if anything, they cranked up the aggression in the second half. And I think for a team that we have spent a lot of time the last couple of years talking about Clayton White and whether he's the right fit for this coaching staff, right? And again, I don't think it's... Even with this performance, I don't think it is unfair to ask the question if Clayton White and Dow Loggins were the right hires and are the right guys for the job. And I will even go so far as to say, wonderful win, but as we have pointed out, the truth about a football result is somewhere in the middle. Great win for the Gamecocks, bad performance from Kentucky, the truth is somewhere in the middle. I still think there are some things about this offense that need to get cleaned up. I still think there were some play calls out of Dow Loggins that I don't particularly love. I think there were a couple of spots where maybe it needs to be a little bit more creative. Maybe it needs to be. We pointed out about Lenora Sellers all last week. With the raw freakish athleticism this guy has, there is zero need for you to have a still pocket. None. I mean, it's not to say you don't ever do it, but I'm saying more often than not, you ought to be taking advantage of Lenora Sellers' ability to move laterally, move left and right, and still be able to deliver a clean football. I'd like to see a little bit more of it. I think we have beaten up the last couple of years on Clayton White, and I don't think that it has been unfair. But in this game, he dialed up the right plays. In this game, he did very well. And what you created was a situation where the South Carolina defense took everything away from Kentucky and got Kentucky panicked, right? Second half, Kentucky's offense looked panicked. It looked like it lacked cohesion, chemistry, timing, rhythm, routine. They could not, pockets weren't clean. Passes were just like, they were Hail Mary'd, but not like Hail Mary, like we're going to throw it deep and see what happens. Hail Mary like, oh God, help, please help me. Like that was the Hail Mary. Like actual Hail Marys were being said by Kentucky quarterbacks in this contest. So I'm very happy with what I saw. I think you saw in a game where, and let's say this, run game still got to be better, all right? You had 86 yards against Kentucky in a game you won 31-6. Late in that game, that run yardage needs to come up. Rocket Sanders. There's a breakout game. Do you believe there's a breakout game coming for Rocket Sanders? 13 carries, 54 yards, average 4.2, had a touch. Like, it's a fine game against Kentucky, but I got to expect for all the hype around this kid, there's a breakout game coming.
I think, and I guess pun intended, I think he's finding his footing. And each time, it seems like he's on the edge of just getting loose.
Yep.
And he's going to get loose eventually.
I agree. It feels like there is a breakout game coming for Rocket Sanders. And that's good news because you've been able to get by two games without him, right? You've been able to get by two games without him. But as we have pointed out, it's meat and taters time. LSU's coming to the crib this weekend. You know who else is coming to the crib this weekend? Game day. College football game day is in Columbia this weekend. They announced that this weekend, right? So, this is your chance. This is your opportunity if you're South Carolina. It's not just a chance or an opportunity. I mean, it is. But I think it's more than that. If you are going to, as Shane Beamer said, there's a lot of lazy takes about this team that are untrue and this team's gritty and it's this and it's that and the other. LSU is a top 16 team right now. And I will tell you, after having watched LSU in their week one contest against USC and the fact that they let Nichols State hang around with them for like a minute. LSU put up a late touchdown in the second half. It was 9-7 after the first quarter. It was, 23-14 after two, and Nichols State had an opportunity late in the game to make it even more interesting. LSU didn't break out to the third quarter. This game, just for the lulz, ESPN's football predictor, Lonzo, their matchup predictor, gives LSU a 51% chance of winning. South Carolina, 49%.
Wow.
Right. There are some folks that have come around on what this team is.
Wouldn't have guessed that before the season started.
Not at all. Before the season started, I wouldn't have guessed it this morning. Okay? I wouldn't have guessed it 10 minutes ago before I went and pulled up the matchup number. 50-50 game, says ESPN. Now, I think LSU's a little bit better of a team. But I also think when Brian Kelly is berating his kicker, leaving the first half. Brian Kelly's losing it right now, all right? He's in panic mode right now. Shane Beamer's not. You got to take advantage of that. We're going to break this game down more extensively as we move on. But when we come back, Clemson also has himself a whale of a weekend against Appalachian State. Let's break that one down next on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Now, if you're one of them, I would say that the Cade Klubnik can take a little break for a week, maybe. 24 of 26, 378, 5 touchdowns against the Appy State Mountaineers. And let me be very clear. This is a Group of 5 team that we talked all week about it. Could come in and could make life difficult for Clemson. And my take was what? You have to put this team down early. You have to get to a lead for them.
I talked to an App State fan Friday who was
How is Diesel doing?
Who was very optimistic about the game.
A lot of them were.
Yeah.
A lot of them were. And again, I don't blame them. They had reason to be. This team did a lot of good things during the off season. This team found some talent. This team had a lot of guys coming back from a relatively successful campaign last year. There was a lot of reason to be optimistic. And that was kind of the reason from the beginning that I said, you got to put this team down and you got to put this team down early. Well, I would say they did. 35 points in the first quarter. They set a record, did Clemson, for most points and most yardage by a team under the Tiger paw in the first quarter, in any quarter. Okay. This is a game. And very rarely do I do it. But this is a game that we finished. And I will acknowledge that I watched this game in replay late Saturday. I was at the Furman game Saturday night. Thanks to our buddy Drew Ingraham and Jason Donnelly for inviting me out. Enjoyed it tremendously. A little Furman after dark under the bright lights of Paladin Stadium. Didn't go great, but It was an enjoyable experience. We'll talk about that later. I was watching this game along with friend of the show, Joey B. And we were, I'll put it this way. We were in the, I mean, where else? We were in the luxury box at Furman, all right? Where else am I going to sit, right? And as we were sitting there, and Joey B is a, he's a Clemson guy who also is a Charleston Southern guy. Went to Charleston Southern, ended up at Clemson, yada, yada, yada. So bit of both. We're watching this game at Furman up in the luxury box. And as I'm looking around, I came to the realization that there were a lot of people up in the luxury box who were watching Furman, but had their phones out and were watching the Clemson game on their phone. And I'm like, I mean, I get it, right? Like, it's college football Saturday. I'm the same way. I was inside. They had two TVs in the luxury box with different games on. I had my phone out with a game on it, and I was flipping around to whatever the highlights going on around the rest of the country were. But I look around at one point, and like a solid number of fans in the stands, down in the stands below us in the box, solid number looking at their phones. And I'm like, what is going on right now? And then I get, ding, a notification from one of the outlets that I have push notifications enabled on my phone for. And it says, Cade Klubnik, Clemson Tigers lead App State 35-0 after first quarter. And I was like, pardon me? So I went to a website that I go to, and this website effectively posts game updates, but they do it clip style, right? They clip highlights as the game goes on. And I'm looking at it, and here's Klubnik dropping dimes to Bryant Wesco Jr. and Jake Brenningstuhl. Here's Phil Maffa on absolute break, 83-yard breakaway touchdown at one point. Like, and I want to be clear. No, this wasn't against Georgia, right? This wasn't against Tennessee. This wasn't against the big dog, with all due respect to Appy State. It's a very good group of five team. But no, I'm not putting Appy State with a top tier SEC, Big Ten, ACC team. Top tier. It's a good little team. It is definitely a team that if you take them lightly, if you look past them, they can come to the house and they can beat most Power 5 teams if they have a great day and the Power 5 team does not. Most. Not all. Most. So, I'm going to say something I don't often say. Great one. 10 of 10, no notes. Right? 10 of 10, no notes. Here's my, I do have a conspiracy theory, though, for you. You ready? Get your tin foil ready. Shape it into that cone. Put it over your head. Here's Rob's conspiracy theory for the day. Great one. I believe Garrett Riley was in control of the offense in this game. I don't believe he was against Georgia. And I'll tell you why. I was talking with Joey B. Clemson guy. Noted Clemson guy. Guy who knows ball. All right? I like talking football with Joe Bright. My guy gets it. We were talking about this game, about the Clemson-Georgia game. And Joe B. was like, hey, go back and look. Anytime that we got tight, anytime that the game was close and Clemson had opportunities, we fell back on what? Fell back on screens, fell back on power runs, zero creativity. The Clemson way. I didn't feel that way about this game against Appalachian State. Felt like the playbook was open. Felt like there was a lot more creativity. It was not just the same four, five, six plays in a rotation. Felt to me like they were utilizing their strengths primarily on the outside. They were scheming to receivers. This is my problem. One of the things about the Clemson philosophy, when people go, what's that mean, Rob? What do you mean when the Clemson philosophy? Here's what I mean. I mean, in the Clemson philosophy, the last couple of years, I think they got so ingrained with having generational quarterbacks and NFL caliber wide receivers that you simplified the playbook. Because you could. You could just beat them with raw athleticism. There, when you don't have that, you have to scheme guys open. You have to run complicated routes and patterns on the outside to get guys open. And I don't feel that's been the case. I did feel that was the case in this game. I felt like you saw a lot of crosses. I felt like you saw a lot of complicated schemes that were throwing two or three guys into one area to spring one of those guys specifically. I felt like you saw a much more creative offense, and that leads me to believe that there is a reason for that. So my conspiracy theory is Dabo has been, if not directly at the controls in the headset the last couple of weeks, then I'm dating back to last year, and I feel like in this game, maybe it was an effort of, you know what, Garrett, I'm going to give you the controls and let's see what happens. And the answer was, 35 points in the first quarter, 21 more in the second quarter, and a wide-open offense that did not look, sorry for it, boring.
All right, so going forward this entire year, whenever Clemson plays poorly, it's going to be because Dabo was calling the plays.
No.
Whenever Clemson plays well, it's going to be, well, look, nope. Look, Garrett Riley's calling the plays. We've got two games. The sample size is very small. It really is. I know you're dating back to last year. A lot of people don't remember last year. It just sounds like a narrative being pushed already, so you could blame Dabo anytime they play
bad.
All
right, hang on. Two things. Number one, I don't know what the hell you mean already. I was saying this week 7 of last season, so already is literally almost a year old. All right? This is not a fresh conspiracy theory. Number two.
I don't remember last week. I'm not sure you do either, but, you know.
I remember takes I have.
You got a lot of stuff going on.
Specifically
right now.
The ones, okay. I get right.
All right. Okay?
The ones I get right, I remember forever. Like I don't remember what I've been saying the last 4 weeks about Georgia Tech, for instance. I don't know what that is. People were texting me about Georgia Tech all weekend. I'm like, what are y'all texting me for? They lost to Syracuse. Of course they did. They're Georgia Tech. What are you talking about? Who's been talking good about Georgia Tech?
Who was Syracuse's quarterback?
That would be former Ohio Stater.
McCord.
Kyle McCord. That's right. I blanked there for a second. I don't know why. I literally interviewed him at ACC Media Days. All right. So here's why the conspiracy theory. Two things. Number one, it's not a fresh one. I had it last year too. So it's not a fresh conspiracy theory. Here's the second thing that I would like to respond to that you said. It is not, oh, if Clemson plays good, it's Garrett. If it plays bad, it's Dabo. No. This is more about what happens on the field, not the result of it. Okay. I go back to Georgia last weekend. If there was a game in the history of Clemson football that you should have opened up the playbook, been creative, right? And I do think this is, and this is a me take, fight me if you wish. I think that Dabo over the past couple of years has kind of gotten into a bit of a habit of not wanting to put cards on the table early in the season, not showing the full hand, right? Exactly what you talked about with South Carolina. Not wanting to show the full hand, not wanting to break open the playbook, not showing what everything up the sleeve is to save it for later in the season for more impactful games. I don't understand why it was that would have been the case against Georgia, but it was. Again, if you still got it on the DVR, go back and watch that game against Georgia in week 1 and tell me what you see. I'll tell you what I see in spots that Clemson was in the game, which, by the way, was like 2.79 quarters of football against Georgia. Clemson's in the game, and yet it was like rotating through the same 7 plays, right? It's like when it's like when you play somebody on Madden that's not very good. They ask Corso and he gives you the same 7 plays over and over, right? In this game, I didn't see that. I saw a change in offensive philosophy that was notable. I saw not just finding ways to get Bryant Wesco Jr. and Jake Bringstall more involved. Because Bringstall had, what, 2 or 3 catches against Georgia? He's gotten 4 or 5 targets. He's got to be more involved. In this game, he had 7 catches on like 8 or 9 targets. That's what it needs to be. It felt to me like the playbook was open. It felt to me like this offense was more creative. It wasn't stale, and it felt stale against Georgia last week. It felt open. It felt more creative. It felt like the run scheme was more than just power run. We're just going to dominate the line and power run. No, I saw a lot more pulling backside guards. I saw a lot more utilizing skill position players in different blocking tactics off the outside for Phil Maffa. I saw a lot of that. In the pass game, a lot more complicated passing schemes. A lot more in terms of crossing patterns, running 2 receivers to a spot, utilizing 1 as less of a target, more of a decoy for Cade Klubnik, trying to get single high safeties drawn the wrong direction. It looked like a much more complicated passing offense, and Cade took advantage of that. Yes, it was against down talent, for sure. All right. I don't know if Clemson is going to be able to come out and have the same success against, and hey, they look bad against Tennessee, another team that won me a lot of money this weekend, because I told you, believe the hype, bull. But NC State has a dramatically better linebacker core and front 7 as a whole than App State does. So we'll see if those patterns are there and utilized. But I'll tell you how I felt. And I said this while I was sitting there watching this game with Joey B at Furman. I said, this feels like a different offense. Not in terms of, you know, excitement, enthusiasm, yada, yada, yada. You know what it felt like to me? It felt like the offense evolved. It felt like to me it was a much more well-drawn up tactical offense. We're going to utilize receiver X to scheme open receiver Y, which has not been the case. In years gone by, it's felt like we're going to put X there and Y there, run them both on a straight route, and hit whoever's open. And guess what? Sometimes they're not open. Sometimes you have to scheme guys open. New Orleans did this to the Panthers all day long. They weren't doing anything like just leaning on Raheed Shaheem. It wasn't just leaning on the talent. It was scheming Raheed open. It was scheming your fastest wide receiver open by utilizing two routes on the right side to make J.C. Horn step up to work Shaheed in behind him and then hit him with the deep ball. And it worked. That's what I got. That's the vibe I got from Clemson. We're going to use these two as a decoy to draw defenses over, and then we're going to pop the big pass. And when Cade has big passes there, he was knocking them down. Even if you are one of the, you have to acknowledge, even against App State, Cade Klubnik looked like a new dude. Hence, my conspiracy theory that Dabo got out of the way and said, let's see what the Garrett Riley offense looks like. And it looked good, dude.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. Well, we'll see. You know, for Clemson fans' sake, and for Cade's sake, I guess. I hope you're right, but I just don't. I'm not buying it.
Texters,
he had a great game against a lower level talented team.
Which is lower level talented team.
Still what he was supposed to do, what they were supposed to do.
Dude,
this is how they were supposed to handle App State.
If Cade finished the game 24 of 26, 378, 5 touchdowns over a 4-quarter spread, I'd be like, that's a good game. That was one half. That's a half. Had he stayed on pace, you are looking at, mathematically, 48 of 52 for 800 yards and 10 touchdowns. That's the pace he was on.
Yeah, but if he did that against Georgia, he would be winning the Heisman Trophy.
But do you see my point? This is not a question. This is a statement. It was a different offense. I'm talking schematically. Texas said, Rob, Dabo was not holding a clipboard when Clemson had the ball. Normally he does, hence the conspiracy theory. Texter said, come on, Lonzo, it was an obvious change in offensive philosophy and strategy that makes it obvious that Riley had more control. I'm not a Clemson fan and have no reason to defend Garrett Riley or Dabo.
Yeah, we'll see going forward. It was a game against an inferior team. We'll see what they do next week.
Don't disagree. NC State coming to the house, and I will tell you right now, not next week. They get a week off, Clemson. It is the 21st.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you right now, that game is not got a time yet. That's the wedding day. I really hope they play that game at noon so I can watch it. No other reason. All right, quick break. Lonzo is about to be the Cade Klubnik of reading sports flashes.
All right, that's twice. Why are you doing that?
Because it worked.
Well, go away. The season got off to a rough start for the Carolina Panthers, who got whooped by the Saints in New Orleans 47-10.
I didn't write that.
I did, right. Bryce Young went 13 of 30 for 161 yards with no touchdowns and one interception and was sacked four times, while Derek Carr completed 19 of 23 for 200 yards and three touchdowns. Carolina had only 58 rushing yards, with Young rushing for the team's only touchdown. Carolina starts 0-1 for with a home game against the Chargers this Sunday at 1 o'clock. Bills quarterback Josh Allen injured his left hand yesterday when he dove into the end zone during his second rushing touchdown in a 34-28 win over Arizona. Allen played the remainder of the game with the hand wrapped. Tune in this Friday at 7 p.m. as the Burns Rebels head to Greer to take on the Yellow Jackets. It's Burns versus Greer right here on your home for Burns Rebels football. The Fan, Upstate.